Welcome to Pillar and Ground Podcast. I'm Will Nettleton, pastor of mission and worship here at LMPC. And this episode is a Pillar and Ground Connections episode where we seek to increase our connection to one another as we stand together in community and mission. And on today's episode, I'm excited. We are joined by our friends from Friends of the Good Samaritan and the Good Samaritan School. We are joined by Dr. Anathy Jebesing this morning, Leslie Luttrell, who's their children's program coordinator, and into a school consultant with them. Ladies, thank you for being with us this morning. I'm going to begin with you, Dr. Jebesing, if you will. Generally, on these connection episodes, we just begin with your personal story. So would you just tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to faith in Jesus, those sorts of things?
Yeah, I was born in a city, southern city in India, called Palayamkottai, which is known for education. And it was established by German missionaries and British American missionaries were involved in that. So it was almost a Christian place. And when I was 13 years old, there's a centenary hall there, two Americans came and they spoke about Jesus, forgiveness of sin in Jesus. And these were the main question when I committed my life to the Lord and I confessed my sins and I accepted Jesus as my personal savior.
Wonderful. There's, I'm sure, quite a bit of history from that point to the beginning of the school and all of that. So would you tell us just a little bit about what happened after that and how you came to the place where you started the school?
I finished my college in another city called Tuticorin. It's a harbor city in South India. And I was working. My father suddenly died of heart attack. That was a big shock for our whole family. And at that time, many people came to pray for our family. And one of them was my husband, would-be husband, Emil Jebesing. And he was into ministry and he was the establishing Friends Missionary Prayer Band that was taking Indians to go as missionaries. He wanted to marry me and my mother was so happy. And I didn't want to marry.
I was about to say, that doesn't always work out that way. That's great.
Yeah. I was at that time 21, and I didn't want to marry. I was crying. My father's death was very close, so I was not in a mood. But then God gave me the verse from Isaiah 55, that is, my thoughts are not your thoughts. Your thoughts are not my thoughts. And as my thoughts are high, the skies. Your thoughts are not like that, when he said that. And then where there's a thorn bush, a myrtle tree will grow, and it will be for Lord's renown. And it was so different to hear that words when I was crying, and then I surrendered to the Lord. So I accepted to marry him. It was a totally different life for me. I didn't know the life of a minister of God until then and what it involves. So it was so good for me, a different type of life. So much joy came into the family and all my sisters, brothers, mother, everyone became happy. A crying home became a happy home when Emil Jebesing entered our family.
So you two were married. And then where did you move to? Did you stay in the same place? Did you move after that? Where did you?
No, we didn't move. He was in a different place, a big village where there were colleges and schools. And he moved to Tuticorin, where I was living. And the office of Friends Missionary Prayer Band, which was there in Sayarpuram, it was shifted to Tuticorin. And we were there and so much involved. And on the fourth day of our marriage, we were in the annual meeting of Friends Missionary Prayer Band. And he organized that first annual meeting. And my task was to clean the toilets by the hostel children so that it will be ready for people to come in. There was a very big crowd, a 3 days meeting. It was a conference where he was speaking about giving your all or coming up as missionaries to go to the unreached areas in India. And I had some jewels, so I gave it as offering because I didn't have money in hand. So that was the first time I was very much touched by doing the Lord's work.
And so from there, tell us a little bit about after your marriage, when did the school begin from that point? I know there's some background. I know it didn't just start on day one as a school, yes. But would you tell us a little bit about that, how that all began?
Yeah, that is, we were there for 10 years. Then he came out of Friends Missionary Prayer Band, and 2 years he was praying, seeking the Lord what he is to do. At that time only we established the Good Samaritans, because there was a big fire in Tuticorin and many people, nearly 300 people died in a cinema theater accident, and we established the Good Samaritans and started helping those people who were affected. And I was already teaching in college, so we mobilized students to go and do help, especially building homes for them. And their own hands, we were doing all those things. Got the national award that year. And so we were doing that. And then my husband was interested in church planting. Okay. And from Transworld Radio, they called him to take up the leadership of ministry. And he was saying, that is not my call, only broadcasting the gospel. My call is to form worship groups, and then they should become churches. And that is my call. So if you allow me to do the further work, then I will take up that. So they allowed him to do that, to go further, because that was not in the memorandum of Transworld Radio. But this, he established another ministry side by side, so that the other ministry of church planting and all will be done through Indian offering. So then we our family shifted from Tuticorin, that's on the southern tip of India, to the capital city of India, which is in north, to Delhi. Everything was new. And I had my son, 6 months old. He was a third one. Mm. Just 6 months old, we came. Language was different. Culture was different. It was terribly cold at that time. We are used to very temperate climate in Tuticorin. So this was difficult. Anyway, when my son was 1 year, on his first birthday, I joined Jawaharlal Nehru University to do my MPhil. In English and English language and literature. So with him, it is easy to get help in India. So I brought two people, one older woman and younger woman. So they were taking care of my children, and I used to go to the college. Sometimes I used to take everyone to the college. It was having a big campus. They will be in the campus, I'll be in the classroom. So that's how I finished my MPhil, and then I enrolled. My husband called me. There is a language where they are not able to give follow-up literature, because it is not having a writing system. The language is not written down. So I think you can take it up and do the work. And the Bishop Nirmal Minj was with him. So he said, it's a need. Will you take it up? I said, I was thinking what he thinks of his wife. He can do everything. But anyway, the Lord continued to talk to me, and I enrolled myself again for linguistics and doing PhD. So they tried to dissuade me, because they said, you continue, that will be helping in your teaching work. I was on leave from the university. So they said like that, but this was God calling. So I took this, I said, I'll work hard. I also speak, it was a Dravidian language in North India. So I said, I also speak a Dravidian language, and I can work hard and do it. So that made me travel across India, seeing many different language groups, tribal groups that don't have any script, I had forms to fill and interviews to take, and all the churches, they just cooperated with me. The missionaries cooperated. It was because of my husband. Everyone cooperated, and I successfully developed a writing system. That is, Indian languages are written with syllabaries, joint letters. But then I broke them down into alphabets and vowels. So I could reduce the sound system to 36 letters, and the keyboard usually has provision for 26. So I put the less used sounds on a shift key. So typing became very fast. Otherwise, at that time, Indian language typing was hard. Typing became very fast, and we developed books in that language. But then, as we gave the books, I realized, once I went to Cuttack, where Bible Society had displayed books, and they took me amidst rows and rows of Bibles. And he said, all these are the Kuduk language, which Varavan people speak. That's what my research was. And then he was telling me, ma'am, you just see, these are all Kuduk language written in Nagari script. Then he took me to the other row. These are all Kuduk language written in Telugu script. And then another row. These are all Kuduk language written in Oriya script. So five scripts were used to write the same language. So he said, no one reads it. They are all like that. That time I realized, unless we teach them through schooling, from the childhood, if they learn their mother tongue, then only they can read their language. Otherwise, they can't read their language. So I had to make it amenable to this, a schooling system through which you had to put them through. So some people helped me to go to several schools, especially in that area, whether we can introduce that. But it was a huge task. I didn't have the money to do that. And from one area, we were making calendars, small primers like that. From Beeli area, a big newspaper published the script in half the page. And they had written, they are trying to make Beelistan, that is a separatist movement. And that day my husband said, you stop all this work because it's going to endanger the missionaries.
Wow.
So you have to stop now. So I stopped the work. Then I was praying, Lord, you make me do something. When a little boy came, knocked at the door, a beggar boy.
Wow.
He was a beggar boy.
Okay, so you thought you were going one direction. You thought you were going towards all of this language work. You run into a dead end there, and then a little boy knocks on your door. So tell us about that.
Yes. So we had so many seminars. I was dealing with six languages and preparing primers in six different languages and going there and introducing that in adult literacy classes and churches. This was what I was doing. But I realized it can't be done. People will not become familiar with that reading, with that script. So what should be the Lord knew? But he sent a beggar boy to me, and I was naturally compassionate, and I took him, and I gave him bread. He was so happy that I was happy and smiling and talking to him and asking him about his family. He will take it home. Every day he came. This was a regular thing. I'll wait for him. He will come and I'll give him whatever I gather, everything that I have, and give him. But one day he brought too many children and I was upset and I was getting angry because I thought I'm making all these children as beggars.
Right.
I'm training them to be beggars. So I couldn't take that. And I asked them, why did you come? And the girl said, Bhook lag rahi hai. It means we are hungry. I am hungry, like that booklet we have. But I was angry. I just said, you got to go and ask your parents. And they said, no, they don't have. Anyway, I said, I'm not going to help you. I'm not here to make you beggars. You see, I have come to Delhi from another place. So I said, I'm not here to make you beggars, and go away. And I shut the door. But I could not walk inside. Every step was heavy, like I'm moving iron pillars, and my brain was just crisscrossed with electric shock like that. And everything was the sound, Buklagreha, 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 that I couldn't bear. And I just fell on my knees and I started crying. And I lifted my hands. And I was asking the Lord, what should I do? And I have done like this. I have sent the children away. I remember my husband has come for that. And I am here for what? And I could see the Lord hanging on the cross and saying, I am thirsty. And what I have done. This broke my whole spirit. And I was crying for many days, praying. When my husband and children go out, I'll be on my knees praying. And then the boy came after some time.
So he came back?
Yes, he came back very hesitant. I think he was hungry again. Anyway, I was so happy to have him. And I took him in and I said, an honorable way to live is to work and live. He was maybe 10 years or 12 years old. And I gave him a nice wet cloth, end of December, very cold in Delhi. And I asked him to swap the outside veranda. It was open. No sweater, no full pant, no shoes, no socks. My eye didn't see that. My eyes saw only the hot food I was giving him, and I was satisfied. But then I realized, no, this is not that. Then what do I do? Then when he came, I told him, you need not do any work for me. I will teach you. So I got all the notebooks where empty pages were there. I got them together, bound them, and gave it to him. All the pencils thrown away by my children. And I took it and started teaching him. And then what do I teach? Then the Lord was saying, what you did, you teach. So this was a Hindi heartland, capital city. It's foolishness to introduce a new writing system. But I introduced that because I realized it is God speaking. So I introduced that, and the children will write fast because Hindi script is difficult for writing. You have to make a big, that type of sound, and then another one. But I divided this, threw it out, and took only that line. So it was easy for them to read.
So all this language work that you had been doing that you thought, well, I guess that's done. There's nothing left to do with that. As this boy comes back to you and you begin to teach him, you realize, oh, no, I can use that with him.
Yeah.
And the other, okay.
Yes.
So you begin to teach him.
Yeah, teach him Bharti, but Hindi language.
Right.
So I called it Hindi Bharti. Mm-hmm. And we wrote books. Primers we developed in Hindi. And then we did the John's Gospel in Bharti script. Then we did the Mark's Gospel in Bharti script. And we started teaching that to the child.
So they're learning the Bible while you're doing this.
And I taught them to pray. I was in the initial stages. I made them kneel down and fold their hands and close their eyes and all I taught them. And when I was praying, suddenly all of them started to laugh. I don't know what I said. Some funny word I must have said, because I didn't know Hindi that much, the local dialect. Mm. They were all laughing. I didn't move. I was just on my knees, my hands folded, but stopped praying. And I didn't open my eyes. And then after some time, I heard a girl taking it up and praying.
Hmm.
That's how they started praying.
Hmm. So how did it move? So I know this first boy comes to you and you begin to teach him. And how did it develop from, did he begin to tell other kids about what he was learning and invite them? Okay.
Yes, yes. He went and announced, there's a woman giving me food and teaching me. So many, many parents started coming.
Okay.
With their children and asking for admission.
Hmm.
And I said, this is not a school. Where do I admit them? This is my home. I'm teaching only one boy.
Hmm.
You don't take it for a school. You take them to the school, I said. And they said, no school will take us. Because private schools, they are hi-fi schools in Delhi. And they won't even open the gate for them. The gate guard will stop them. So they don't allow us to enter the school. And in those days, government schools were not functioning that much. There was so much... Okay. And so they wanted me to keep them. And I was keeping some 10, 15 children in my garage. And in between the rabbits, I kept will dive in. And then these children will jump. I didn't understand. Sometimes I didn't understand the local language. One boy was jumping. I want to go pizza, pizza, pizza means he wants to pass urine. I was saying, you sit, okay, okay, you sit. So that was my communication. But anyway, we taught, and my daughter went into the slum. She was in Vellore Medical, Christian Medical College.
Okay.
And they gave her a task to go and see a local doctor. So the local doctor said, this slum is a big slum, you take a survey. So she went into the slum and wrote an article which was published in the newspaper. There are so many children in the slum who have no help. They are not going to school. So if neighbors help, it will be good.
Mm.
Like that she wrote. And some schools which were helping the poor, they contacted me. So they said, you come and teach our teachers and I will send you a teacher.
Hmm.
So she didn't speak English.
Wow.
I didn't speak that much Hindi. But we developed all the initial primers with her.
Okay.
Both of us will sit together and somehow we will make it. And she will read, and she was the first teacher, external teacher for me.
Okay.
And I would go to the their office. And I would supervise them and teach them. And that is how I came to know so much about schooling and how do we do for the help of the government.
Mm.
There's a department for slum. And we have to approach that slum. And all those things I learned from there.
Because I guess at this point, you've got too many. You can't teach anymore in your home. You've got too many coming to your house. So what happens at that point? Once you've gotten more than you can fit in your home, what becomes the solution?
Yeah, there were children. I didn't have any solution except teaching. My husband was just saying, how many children are coming? Because even when he comes from the States, he will have to walk over the children. And if he tries to sleep, here they will be saying, A for apple, B for ball. I don't know how he tolerated me. Anyway, one day there was an accident. A boy was hit on the forehead by the bumper of a car, a speeding car. And he lay just unconscious. I thought he was dead. Maybe. And children took him into my garage and called me. I rushed. And here was a boy, no breathing, no movement. And I thought, this is the end of the program. Now mm-hmm. I can't help the children. I can't help them. We were that time. We shifted to an apartment to be near my son's school. I insisted on that from a big locality, hi-fi locality, we shifted to this. And here, they won't allow me to bring the children here.
Mm.
They steal they put their clothes and things outside, and these children steal that. Mm. They used to steal my things also.
Oh, wow.
When I give you the milk, the cup will be disappearing.
Yeah.
Because I use beautiful cups and it'll anyway, so we were just kneeling down. I asked the children and me, we all knelt down and prayed. No response, nothing. We cried and prayed. No movement in the boy. But then we stood up. And then I was praying in my heart, what to do? What is the next step? What we are to do now with this dead boy? What do we do? Mm. And at that time only his eyelids moved like this. And then he got up. Mm. Miracle.
Wow.
I saw so many miracles, everyday miracles. And God telling me every day, do not be afraid. I am with you. I will help you. These verses were coming to me, were given to me every day, which made me go ahead. But one day after this accident, my husband said, now you have to close down the school. You cannot bring slum children inside the apartment. We will get into problem.
Hmm.
So you have to close down the school. Then I said, I can't do because I have some teachers also. Then I said, you give me 3 days. And he was to go to Chennai. And he had to come back 3 days. When he comes back, everything should be settled. I should settle down the teachers. I should send back the children. I should wind up the work. 3 days. 3 days I didn't do anything. I didn't eat. Mm. I didn't take water. I was just praying, what is it, Lord? You said, I have to help these children. And my husband says, I have to close down. What is the paradox? I can't understand. You show me the way. And I wanted to get help from the Bible. And I just opened the Bible. Give me a verse. And there it comes. Wives, obey your husbands. Mm. So I couldn't say anything, but I didn't take any step to do. They were coming and teaching and going. And the third day, my husband had to return. So in those days, flight means it was something we all think it is dangerous and something may happen. So whenever he traveled, I used to kneel down and pray. It was night, 10 o'clock. He had to reach home and he didn't. And I was kneeling and praying. And 12 o'clock, he didn't come. One man crossing India, Delhi, he called me. Where's Emil? I said, he is supposed to come home. He's not there. I was very much worried. And I told him I'm worried. And he said, sister, don't be afraid. God will protect him. God will save even a fly to save his child. So don't be distressed, he was saying me. And he went off. And then again, 3 o'clock, no, he didn't come. And then I was on my knees. I didn't get up from my knees. I was on my knees praying for him. And then morning, 6 o'clock, the call came from my husband. He said there was disturbance in the flight, and the windscreen broke, and snow came in. And they had to land the plane, emergency landing. Mm. So they had belly landing in another city. Mm. And no one was there in the night to open the plane. Plane was not damaged, but no one was there. And then a small airport. So the manager had to be informed, and he never drove that vehicle. Jeep, and he drove that vehicle and came, and then they had to take everything, and they were all given a toothbrush and paste, that's all. And he says, I have a toothbrush and paste, I'm here. And when he came from there, a child was standing in front of my door, and she was telling her father, I want only study in this school.
Hmm.
And he came. And he smiled and said, you continue.
Mm, wow.
You need not stop.
And so, So you go from there, he had changed his mind from you've got to close the school to you can keep the school up and running. Where does it go from there?
So then I thought we cannot run the school in this place because young boys are coming, speeding and all. And there is always danger to run a school in an apartment. So I decided, I had learned from the other school that they had relationship with the slum department. So I came to know about the slum commissioner. So with 2-3 people I went, teacher and all, I went to the slum commissioner. And then I told him, this is what we are doing. So many children want to come to this. I can't run the school in an apartment. Mm. One more garage was given by a well-meaning person. So even then it was not enough. Children were coming so much. So I said, give me a place and I will put a tent and I will keep it neat and clean and I will do that in the slum. Mm. Slum was a dirty place, but anyway I said, I will do that. And I was already having the doctorate degree. So I told him, I'm educated, I can help them. And he said, no, I can't give you any place in the slum. I have no authority to give you. But we have built a toilet facility. I knew that. We always close our nose when we cross that place.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that. Toilet facility. There's a room inside. It is for homeless people to sleep. So you can use that during the daytime and nighttime you give it to them. So it can be used for helping the children if you are very particular about helping the children.
Hmm.
This was a disaster for me.
I can imagine.
Toilet. Yeah. And I was a professor.
Yeah.
And that pride was also there, I think. Before God, it's nothing. So I was looking at him. What do I say? Those who came with me were silent. They couldn't say anything. I had to give the answer. And I was looking at him, unbelieving what he was telling. How dare he say that to me? That thought is also coming. And suddenly he vanished and the manger scene is slowly moving in. And like that, like a film, it was moving in. And I see the manger, Jesus, oh, I can't move that scene from my mind even now. That scene and the little baby Jesus telling me, if I can come into this dirty place, why can't you go into that dirty place to help my children, to save my children? Yes, quickly I shook my head and I said, yes, sir, we will take it. Immediately they handed over the keys and everything. And he said, we are very happy. You, one of the elite, you are coming to help the slum children. He also said, I was brought up in a slum and I have become a commissioner. So your help will be a big help for them. So he helped us. And when I opened the door, I went to open the door. The teachers were behind me. The children were behind me. The smell hit us so hard. And we fell back. And then, because there was a window without the shutters, and from there all the smell was coming from the toilets. Men and women had toilets, rows and rows. They were coming in. Then the children immediately sat like that. They were so happy. Slum children. So then we brought roses, lilies, and we kept it. I put fan. Then my husband made some dish for the children. He was also seeing the children. He was also wanting to help. He had helped without my knowledge. He had helped some children. So we had started school there. One room was divided. One side, one teacher will stand that side. Other teacher will be standing in the other room this side. And then they will teach so that there won't be any clash.
So this is the toilet school.
Yes. They named it toilet school. And newspapers covered that school. Toilet school. And then the NDTV, TVs covered the school. And then there was a question in the parliament. Hmm. What is that? There is a school in the toilet. My God, I had to answer that. And then they were demolishing the slum. Hmm. The government ordered to demolish the slum. So it was a terrible thing. People running around, children, they were taking their children, mothers, and here and there they were trying to retrieve things from their homes, but there were so many bulldozers demolishing the slum. We were standing afar, we couldn't intervene. Army was there, police were there, it was a big thing. Without notice, they came and demolished. Because we'll go and ask, I stopped demolition twice, going to the Minister of Urban Development for the whole of India was my classmate's husband. So I went and talked to him. Twice it was stopped, but the third time they could not stop. The commissioner told me, now we cannot stop demolition of slum. Then he told me, if you are very particular about helping these children, go to the education department. So I didn't know where the education department was. I had gone to several places asking for the education department. But finally I found out where the department is and gave my application. And I wrote, we are running the school. The toilet complex was not demolished. They kept it for 3 more months. And the children came up from a faraway place where they were shifted. They were given at that time 14 square meters or 18 square meters. And they could shift there. No home, nothing, wetland, agricultural land. And they were there. Okay, so they were shifted there. From there, many children were walking and coming to the school. But then I went to the education department, put up my file, and then to see what happened to our file, because no reply was there. I went and saw the officer was sitting there. I went and stood before him with another person, another board member, and he said, yes, this is the file. There was no name as Good Samaritan School at that time. Hmm. So it was just a program, Bharti Literacy Program, that is what we called. And yes, your file is here, but we cannot approve the file. You can never pay the salaries in par with the government salaries. We can't give you approval. So I didn't move. I was just standing there. He thought we'll go away. Okay, we'll say go away, but I didn't move. Then he looked up at me and he asked, he was just judging me. And he was from the same language area which I had come from, Tamil. And he asked me one question, are you a Christian? Mm. Yes, I said. Please go and sit there. I'll come at 5 o'clock. So we were sitting on a bench until 5 o'clock, and then he came. No one else was there. Everyone has gone out. And then he told me, I am also a Christian. I will help you. Mm. So he and his wife used to come to my home, sit in the garage, which I made into an office. And I had a simple computer also. Got a computer. He and his wife was an officer in National Informatics Conference Committee or something. There she was an officer. So she was dealing with the whole nation. And he was working in the Delhi government, in the education department. Both of them prepared the files for me.
Wow.
All the files they will type. Mm. So it was a remarkable thing which they did. They said there cannot be even a single mistake in the file. Mm. If they return the file to you, it will take another 6 months for the file to pass. Mm. So it should not return. It should keep going. Mm. So they worked hard on it, put all the needed documents in that, and we have to submit the file to him only. So he took up the file and told the Khyber authority, and it was when the slum school was going on. So he brought the authorities to the slum school, toilet school. They had seen that. It was neat and clean with fans. Their schools do not have fans. So fans, I had put coolers also because summers will be very hot for the children. So I had coolers, tents painted by children. So they were taken up and the file moved with the help of many people. And then we had to go to Land Owning Authority, Delhi Development Agency, DDA. So Delhi Development Authority. So there we had to put up the file. That had so many problems, but then it passed. And the man commissioner was asking, because I had a high recommendation, very high. At that time, Modi was in Gujarat, chief minister. His first assistant was praying with us. So he came. He took me to the prime minister's office. And they passed the file. Okay. And we got the permission to buy the land to be allotted. Land was allotted. And the first, we had to have in our account 80 lakhs of rupees. That is $100,000 or more. And that was paid by International Cooperating Ministries.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But once we selected the land and everything, it was a very dirty land with all dyes and everything. It was a deep and dye water was there. But anyway, I thought that will be the best place for us. I selected that. And then children, when they were shifted, nearby only. So we all used to go there and pray. Children, teacher and the children in 5-6 places. We will stand in the deep land with the dirty colored water and we will all hold our hands and pray that God will give a school for the children. The slum children, they prayed from their own. But the parents didn't believe that when we build a school, we will still take the slum children. Oh no, they will, you know, some miscreants were spreading like that. They won't take you, In 2 years, we had to build the land. And we needed money. I had 3 times the land price had gone up. So again, my husband introduced me to some people. And they provided the money for the land. We have purchased the land because they gave only 30 days. The man was saying, madam, remember 30 days. If 1 day is more, the interest you cannot pay. So 30 days you remember. We paid on the 20th day. So that was all God's miracle without having anything in the purse. And then we needed money for the building. We started to pray. How to get the money for the building? No money. And then one day I had to do some books I had to buy for the children. I said, Lord, all these days, without any money, I placed the order and you provided, I bought. But now, without any money, without any promise, I am going to place the order. But you show me a sign. I came for lunch and I prayed and went out to take the letter. There I had $300 from a boy who came to see my husband and he sent them to the toilet school, a Jewish boy. And he sent, Anandi, I thought of you. And I'm saying $300 and it came by ship and reached that particular day. And exactly the amount I needed to place order for notebooks for the children. Already I was having 700 children. But then for this building, when I was praying and I came home, there was a letter, very beautiful handwriting. I had never seen such beautiful handwriting. Very attractive envelope and it's written Little Lamb's Closet. And I opened, it was signed by Leslie Little. It was $800. We got from the sales And this is this amount we are sending to you. We heard that you are building a Christian school, and this is for that.
Wow.
See, I looked at the check, $800. Lord, how can we build a school? I was looking at it again and again, $800 you are giving. But then I realized I have to thank the Lord for that. I knelt down, held the check up, and thank God for this. I didn't know her. I didn't know the church. I didn't know anything about them. But from nowhere, the check has come. And you have the power to multiply that. Mm. So I thank you, Lord, and thank you for this $800 you have given us for the building. And I got up within 10 or 15 minutes. A call came from Peru, from the same International Cooperating Ministries, Dois Rosa. So Dois Rosa said, Ananti, he was excited. The McDonald's are giving $250,000. They have asked, they had given. And I said, but we need more. Mm. No, don't say like that. God will provide on the way. He taught me a good lesson. You walk ahead and he will provide. Mm. So we started building the construction. It was a sandy place, so we had to put 420 pillars, 100 feet deep, reinforced concrete. We did that. We built the foundation. Again, no money. Hmm. And at that time, Preston Correll was staying with me. And he was going to the slum children and teaching. And that day, God was telling me, why did I send this boy to you? He was a very young boy, was not even a graduate. And I told him, Preston, today you don't go to the slum, you come with me to the office. Then I told him, I'm not able to write to the Americans, they don't understand. I'm telling him that we have to build the whole school in 2 years, and he tells me he will provide only half the money. I can't understand. Can we make him understand? So then we realized that he is asking for matching grant. We have to raise. And I don't know anyone. How will I raise? Then Preston called his father, Jess Correll. And then he called his grandfather. So grandfather sent $100,000. Hmm. So every month we needed $200,000. And they will struggle. The whole family struggled. Now they say, we didn't know how the next $100,000 will come. And they will raise $100,000 immediately. Dois Rosa will send $100,000. So we had $200,000 every month.
Wow.
It was their headache, not my headache.
Hmm.
And a beautiful school came up. Hmm. And all came for inauguration. Hmm. Leslie and all, they were standing outside crying. They never imagined. All were crying. Hmm. From Switzerland, one, Bertel Birgagard was helping me. And he came. He had cancer. Even then he came.
Hmm.
And he used to play for all the programs we had, piano. And he was crying, 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 because those who saw the toilet school, now it is like a 5-star hotel.
Right.
Yeah. So good.
Well, so I think that brings us close to where the school is today. And so we'd love to hear, just for our folks who don't know about what the school is like or how the children get involved, could you tell us a little bit more? How many students are at the school? How do the students come to be admitted into the school, some of those types of things?
Initially, we just announced inauguration of the school, and school has to open on the 1st of April.
Hmm.
So we had to take admission. So I already appointed two, three teachers, and they were to see the admissions. And we had prepared how to do admission and all those things, how office will function, how we will have a management committee. So many things we had to do. We had done all these things.
Okay.
So 1st of April, we had to take admission. You know, from nowhere, all our toilet school children came back.
Yeah.
And they just rushed into the school. This is our school. This is our school. And they sat in the classrooms. So the one day we were having more than 700 children.
Wow. Okay, so that was on the first day.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
And then we went on. We needed more teachers. We started appointing teachers.
Okay.
We had management committee and that way, and then staff selection committee. Everything was formed quickly.
Mm.
I had known, so I also went to study one how to establish and run school. That was a postgraduate diploma.
Mm.
So I did that also.
You have done a lot of schooling.
So I knew how to do, what to do, when to do, everything. Yeah. I came to know. And then I was doing everything systematically.
Okay.
So systematically the school was established, and then there was one rule that we had to admit children from the neighborhood, okay, 1 kilometer radius. So there may be rich children, poor children, but we had to admit.
Hmm.
And there the education department demanded a fee structure. So we thought of one school. By mistake, I put double as the fee structure.
Hmm.
Somehow it came, but that was right actually.
Hmm.
It's much lower than other hi-fi schools.
Okay.
So that structure is going on. That fee structure we have. So those who can afford, they pay.
Okay.
These children, we assess the children and then about their capability. And we initially we were giving totally free for the children with the sponsorship raised.
Hmm.
You know, how, where will we go for providing for the children? We have to have someone supporting that.
Hmm.
That is when, in 2004, we established Friends of the Good Samaritan. So from India, I learned how to do society here, non-profit here.
Hmm.
And then I came to know Friends of.
Hmm.
That can be established in the US. So Friends of the Good Samaritan.
Hmm.
And I made all the papers, all the documents and came here. And I had a lawyer working for that. So I asked the lawyer. He said, you come, I will come. But he didn't come. I didn't know what to do. Then I told Jess. I was staying in Jess Coral's house. I told him, I asked for the lawyer to come. But he didn't turn up. What do I do? Then he said, he called a lawyer. And he said, you do it today for her and you do it pro bono. So pro bono it was done. Somehow it happened. I had gone back, then Preston worked on it. Somehow it happened. It was established on the 24th of February. That was the same day when the Good Samaritans was established.
Mm.
That certificate also has the same date.
Wow.
Exactly after 25 years.
Wow. That's amazing.
And so
we
started,
We
started raising sponsorships. So Preston became the first director of Friends of the Good Samaritans. He was in Atlanta learning how to manage, how to do, and he and Rachel, they got married. And he was there with me for one full year, and then after marriage, they both were living with me for 11 months. So they knew everything about the program. But he is not used to asking people for money. So he'll be baffled whenever I asked. He'll be baffled. He didn't know what to do.
Hmm.
Then Rachel will answer, Auntie, he's driving. Okay. Then finally I called Jess. We need help to run the school. Then he established everything. At that time, Laura Mary came and sat with me. She was with me for 3 months. And she saw the struggle we were facing without money. And we will be gathering and praying with tears every day that God will provide the needed money.
Hmm.
Then she said, when she left, she said, Auntie, you give me 3 months. I will raise money. Hmm. And you will get regular support. But within a month, she did that.
Wow.
She was so much committed and so much for that work. And only when she had the third child, she needed help.
Hmm.
So we had another director.
Okay.
Our present director is Natasha Turner. And she is with us.
Uh-huh.
and traveling with us.
Wonderful.
Yes. And she's doing, and Leslie from that day on or even before that started helping us. First, she made meetings with the leadership of Centenary Methodist Church. Mm. And then their school, and took me to their school, and the children started sponsoring the children there. So a relationship was built up between children in the school and children there. Before that, there was one story that is Tim Philpott, a senator, came to India. And he heard about the toilet school. He visited the toilet school. And when he came back, he went to Centenary Methodist Church and the school. Lexington Christian Academy. Mm. And there he told the third graders, whose teacher was Nancy Elwood. So she made the children pray. And the children went home and prayed. One was Leslie's child, Ben, and another was Dale Ditto's child, David. Hmm. So they both prayed. And David's father, Dale Ditto, came with International Cooperating Ministries. Hmm. And he refused to go to Agra to see Taj Mahal and came to see the school for which his son is praying. Hmm. That is when the project started. Okay. International Cooperating Ministries. So it's all a network which God built.
Yeah.
I could never have imagined or dreamed of, but God did everything.
Mm.
And He got the network, He got the provision, He connected the need and the provision for in the level of the child, in the level of the family, in the level of the school. Yeah. It was nothing of my dream or vision.
Hmm.
It was God's dream, God's vision, God's execution, God's fulfillment.
Hmm. Wonderful. Well, Leslie, I wonder, could you tell us just for a few minutes about the children's program currently, what it looks like to be involved with that, if people want to get involved, what that looks like? Just give us a little bit of the background there.
Okay. Just a little of the background is after the school was established and the sponsorship program began, my husband and I immediately wanted to sponsor a child my son's age and a child my daughter's age. And it really gave my husband and I just a way to teach our children about poverty, about how we can make small sacrifices to make a big difference. And I saw that really influenced my children to be more compassionate and generous. When I started volunteering with the organization, we sort of began dreaming that we could become a sponsorship program that would connect kids a little bit more than a picture on the refrigerator.
Right.
So about that time, a lady, Amanda Evans Lang, had written a book called Sadie in the Land of Dancing Colors. And it was about a little girl who had visited India. And she saw the poverty. She stumbled upon the school and began to ask Mummy G, that's what the children call Anathy, is Mummy G, what can I do to help? And so she wrote letters to her friends asking if they could help. And from there, we started begin to build a program called Sadie Shares.
Mm.
And after that, Amanda wrote another book for us to honor the story called Sadie and the School That Love Built. And that tells the story of the toilet school. But we established three programs in Sadie Shares. One is for any type of children's group to raise money. We call it Sadie Shares Lunchbox Love, Sadie Shares Medical Care, and Sadie Shares Education. And children are challenged to earn $5 and give it to help the school. Then we've developed a 4-week curriculum for faith-based groups to do. And probably the one I'm most excited about is called Sadie and Sonny's Club. And that is for sponsoring families. When they sponsor a child and they have their own children ages 4 to 12, they can sign up for free for their children to be part of Sadie and Sonny's Club. And they receive a backpack with our book, Sadie and the School That Love Built, some parenting tips to teach their children about poverty and what they can do. And then 3 times a year, we do a mailing that goes directly to the child, and it's from Sadie. Mm. And in the mailing, there's a devotion, a letter, a link to a video, some craft activities, and then a letter writing template, making it easy for them to write their sponsored friend in India.
Okay, wonderful. And if people want to hear about that and would like to get involved, have a child maybe of school age, and they want to get involved with the sponsorship program, how do they do that? What would be the easiest way?
Yeah, our website is FOTGS.com. For our general website, but we have a website for our children's program called Sadie Shares. And they can get on the website, or they can contact us directly. They choose a child, and then they can sign up for the free children's program. We have pictures of the children on our website.
Mm, wonderful. Well, Indu, I want to finish with you. I know we've talked a lot about the school and about the children, and perhaps for some of our listeners that will feel a little abstract. Could you just give us maybe a story or two of the children who are coming through the school, what the impact has been on them?
Oh, yeah. There are many, many stories of children who have passed out and who are now established and doing so well for themselves, and who come back to the school to give back all that they have, got from the school. So I'd like to share about two of our students. One is a boy called Tapan Adhikari. He joined the school right from the first grade. And before that, his older brother was in the toilet school. Mm. But this Tapan joined the school, the main school that was built later. And he was a shy boy, but he was very committed to, to going through the course and studying. And the teachers were very supportive of him because he was interested in, going ahead with his education. And we, as teachers, the believing teachers, always along with the teaching, share the gospel with the children. Mm. So at one point of time when he was in class 6, and I think class 6, he accepted the Lord as a Savior, but he could not openly profess his faith. But we knew that he loved the Lord and he understood what it meant to be a child of God. And after completing his 10th grade, he sort of shared with his parents, that he wanted to be a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ. And his family were very, very upset with him, and they didn't want him to be a part of the family. And so there was another teacher who sort of took him in, and he completed his education in school. And now today he is doing his PhD in herbal medicines. And he's on fire for the Lord. He loves the Lord and he shares the gospel, and he's in touch with Auntie Ananthi, and he keeps, giving his whatever he's doing and how things are going on for him. So he's been a blessing to many students as we share about him, as he shares about himself. And we have another student who also comes from the slum, and his parents never ever had a job, and they struggled to feed. They are three siblings, and only one of them could come to school. And so this child's name is Vishwajit, and he had to help in many ways at home, to help the parents in earning money. So he wouldn't be very regular to school because he would go out to do odd jobs in order to earn money. But he just enjoyed coming to school whenever he did. And as teachers, we encouraged him. When he was in the 11th grade, we had introduced a new subject called food production. And the children who study this subject go on to work in the hospitality sector. So he took real interest and he did so well in this subject. And after he completed his schooling, he did short courses, diploma courses in food production. And he got a job in a cruise liner.
Oh, wow.
And so he could sail. And right now he's somewhere in the U.S.
Okay.
Sailing. And he sent his photographs just thanking Mamiji and saying that without her intervention in his life, he couldn't be where he is today. Mm. And he's all full of thanks. And he has not also openly accepted the Lord, but then he does believe that it is Jesus who made things possible for him in his life.
Wow.
And there are so many other stories like these children who have, we have children who become doctors, someone doing the nursing course, and a lot, engineers. Mm. So we are so thankful to the Lord for this school that has helped so many children to, you know, to achieve and to fulfill their dreams.
Mm, wonderful.
It's wonderful.
Well, so, I mean, so, yes, please.
No, should I say the connection with the LMPC?
Yes, please. Yeah, share a little bit with, for our people. There is a good connection with our church and Friends of the Good Samaritan. Please share.
So we came to Delhi and my husband was in charge of Transworld Radio. For the whole of South Asia. And we were broadcasting the gospel. When he took up, it was six languages. Transworld Radio was broadcasting in six languages. And when he retired, it was 66 languages.
Wow.
So many unwritten languages. They were also targeted and they were given the gospel. And in that way, by radio program, sponsoring radio program, he came in touch with Hugh McClellan and the McClellan Foundation. So they were a great supporter of that work. And he used to come. He used to come and meet him. And Hugh McClellan used to come to India, meet him. And at one particular time, he came to the school when we finished the school.
Wow.
So he came to the school and he and his family, his son-in-law, and they were all there. And that is how we got related to LMPC.
Mm,
I didn't know that he was there, LMPC. I don't know if any other way also we were connected.
Right.
But this, once I came here, it was such a different experience. Mm. All love the Lord so much. It's not only loving the Lord, obeying His call, His mission. They were all involved in mission. And I saw families taking up children and bringing them up as their own children.
Mm.
And the second time we came, we did not get so many sponsorships. I think I'm not a great speaker or something. We can raise so much fund. So we did not have that many sponsorships, very less sponsorships. And I came here and I was first introduced to Stephanie. And I just told her, Stephanie, we have 50 children. How many do you want to sponsor? She asked, how many sponsorships you need? I said, we have 50. And she got all the 50.
Hmm.
Oh my God, that was the surprise and that was the overflowing support we got at one go. So this church is something very special for us.
Hmm.
Loving the children. In every family I see the love for the children. Yeah, serving the children. And this is a completely different place.
Hmm.
I see that in their church also, but Lookout Mountain Presbyterian Church is so special.
Mm.
And you know, people call me. Once I was there, Jan called me, Jan Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
She called me and she was speaking in a very low voice. I said, Jan, you speak aloud. And she continued to be praying for me and the work in a very low voice. And finally, when she finished prayer, she said, I am in the church, and closed the phone. Then I realized, my God, from the church she is calling and praying for the work.
Mm.
So what amount of love you all have for the work, children's work.
Mm, it's wonderful.
What we do, my God.
Well, we consider it such a joy and a privilege to get to do it. And thank you all so much for being here today and sharing more about the ministry. For our people who are new to Friends of the Good Samaritan, I hope that you will be encouraged to check out the opportunities that were laid before you earlier in the episode. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Pillar and Ground. We hope you will join us for future episodes.